Welcome to Linux Lugcast. We are an open podcast / Linux users group that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We need to change that because EST is not all year round. Right now we'd be ECT. Is it? No. Yeah, whatever. Every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you would join us, please visit linuxlugcast.com for the server details. We also have a Mumble how-to on the site explaining how to configure Mumble. Then just join us in the Linux Lugcast room. During the live show, if you are unable to join us in Mumble, then you can listen to us streaming live. You can also join us in IRC on Freenode, channel / Linux Lugcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you would like us to discuss, please email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com. We also have a Google Plus community site and a mail list. Please visit our website for the direct links. Good evening. I'm 5150, and I will be your host tonight for episode 104. Also joining us are Honky Magoo.
Evening, folks. So right now, our email list server and our feedback is kind of not working, but I'm hoping to get that fixed soon once I figure out what I want to do with it.
Okay, Joe is still deafened where he can't hear me anyway, and last but not least, we have Netminer.
Yep, somebody's got to be the Indian around here.
Okay, before we continue with listener feedback, I think we ought to talk about for a minute. Well, you probably heard it on the last show, but that's only been up for a little bit, so you may actually be listening to the live stream before you listen to the last show. I don't know, but we probably ought to revisit, what's been happening on the feed and, why you're not going to find episode 102 in the feed and, and Honky can explain that a lot better than I can, so I'm just going to drop it over to him.
So, basically, it was just that, we're we like to be open, so we love the idea of anybody showing up and, anybody joining. Unfortunately, that night, we had somebody join, and the language is a little bit more than we normally have on the podcast, which is really not that big of a deal, but we've kind of, it's not like a set rule, but it's one of those things where we're kind of like, well, we're trying to keep ourselves a family-friendly, safe for work type podcast. So when sitting down to look at trying to edit it or, edit out any of the cursing or anything like that. It looked like it was going to be too much. And then you have the fact that past the time that Netminer and other people started to leave, apparently I had a lot to drink that night. So I had started droning on and on a lot even more. So that would require even more editing. There was a lot of good content on the show. There's a lot of good discussion. There's a lot of like cool things discussed. I thought it was a really good episode. The problem was I'd feel off trying to edit the crap out of that thing, and then trying to, it didn't seem to. I don't know. I didn't feel right putting it on the regular feed, but I do want to still put it out there. So, what we're gonna try and do is I just gotta throw some quick notes together, and then I'm gonna upload it to Hacker Public Radio. So that it's out there, and then I'm going to put a link in the on the website to episode 102 with a link to the HPR episode once it gets uploaded. So that it's still going to be out there, but it's not going to show up on our regular feed.
Now, speaking of the feed, last time you were having trouble since web providers had changed, adding new shows to the AUG feed. Were you able to do that, or did you just have to start over with a new feed like you were talking about?
Well, the problem is, see, our old feed was set up with FeedBurner. FeedBurner, to my best of my understanding, is a kind of feed caching. And when we also use a program called PowerPress or Blueberry Press, and that kind of helps with the it works with WordPress to set it up for podcasting. So it integrates, it sets up the feeds and gives you a little section when you're making a post that you can put a URL for media and stuff to be able to get it to post. I don't think I'm explaining it properly, but either way, when I reset up WordPress and then reset up PowerPress, it was able to reset up and reestablish with the old MP3 feed without any problems. But for some reason, it was not able to set up the AUG feed right. So I have a URL, and I even actually got it set up the AUG feed with FeedBurner. So I've updated the AUG feed so it'll work with FeedBurner. But the problem is, if you were subscribed to the old AUG feed, then you won't get any new updates past, I think, episode 100. But if you go into the new AUG feed off of the website, subscribe to the new AUG feed off the website, you should be able to get at least the past 10 episodes plus anything going forward.
Okay, so I guess probably if you're hearing us from downloading the show, you've probably already figured this much out. But if not, I do want to congratulate Honky, because we're up, we're current up to last show 103 on both the feeds now. So, I was kind of concerned. I would expect most of the people who are listening to us probably are also joining us on G+, or going back and looking at the website or whatever. But if not, I'm hoping there's nobody out there that they just quit getting shows and decided we'd pod faded, because they hadn't seen a show drop in a couple weeks. But I've been trying to do my best to get the word of mouth around. They mentioned, I think, on... I did manage to mention on another podcast. I was going to leave this for later, but I was a guest on the last U Random. I don't know if they have a really big listener base yet. I'm hoping they ought to. It's a great show. URandom-podcast.info. I think if we all just do our best to, get the word out. Hey, no, we're still around through other media. People will be able to follow us over this little bump in the road.
Which is another reason why I thought it was a good idea to post 102 to HPR, is to also invite people to check the website out if they have been subscribed to the AUG feed, to resubscribe to the new AUG feed, and basically, like you said, is to just let people know that we have been pod-faded, that we just, like you said, we had a little bump in the road, but we're getting things back together. And when it comes to the mailing list and the feedback, so all of those were because of the way things were redirected, I have to now I gotta figure out whether I can just talk to Tony about keep the original service we had before and then just kind of redirect some stuff, or whether I want to try to find set up another service somewhere and then just do it that way. I don't know. That's what I'm talking about when I say I'm not sure which way I really want to go with it. Whether I know, like, a lot of these services, I'm going to say even the between hosting providers and stuff like that, they offer email stuff. So I'm not sure whether I can set up mailing lists through some of the email stuff that they offer, or whether I'm going to, if I can set up, because I'm not set up for business class internet access. And because I'm not set up with business class internet access, I don't think I can set up an email server in my on my home network for, you know, just as a, I mean, the mailing list stuff is pretty much all it is the, like, a redirect for things. But I'm not sure if last I knew, ISPs frowned upon people hosting their own email servers in their houses if they're not unless they're on business class internet access. So I'm not sure if I could do it that way or what my options are. I gotta explore that. And like I said, either way, I'm gonna have to talk to Tony about redirecting things properly, because I think the all the email stuff he definitely took care of. But like linuxslugcast.com, I had control of that, so that was easy to move the website.
Well, I managed a mailing list for a group a while back, and I got Ken Fallon to help me out. It's actually hosted through Hacker Public Radio. They had their mail list server, and it was easy to add, you know, somebody else on. But I got the impression it wasn't something they were running locally, that it was just like a free service they were getting from a third party. I'm not sure. I do know had constant spammers trying to get on, but the way it was set up is, you know, you can't join unless you're authorized. Whereas for us, you know, we would probably have to have it open to everybody, and then that, you know, somebody has to approve every post before it goes up when you get in that situation. So I don't know if that would work or not. Like I said, I think probably got plenty of bandwidth on my Scaleway server, or as cheap as they are, we could probably pitch in and you know, it's like a DigitalOcean droplet, but a little cheaper. And I talked about that a few episodes ago. So if you got anybody's interested, you can just scroll back a ways and find where I talked about setting that up.
Yeah, and I was actually the person who was took care of all the spammers and stuff like that on the feedback and mailing list. I also want to talk, I should probably get a hold of Phweeb, because I know he was talking about, he had talked on this podcast a while ago now, but he was trying out different types of mailing list servers, or he had like two different type of mailing list servers that he was working on. I think one of them was like a free service. But I'm going to reach out to him. I'm going to reach out to Tony. I haven't got around to it yet.
Anki, I think you need to, I don't know whether you're going to put it on the HBR as a prefix to the HBR 102, but certainly at least on our website, some kind of NSW, and this is a more adult version of our show, etc. Probably should be put with the linkage.
Yes, and I had already recorded a kind of brief intro to episode 102, explaining all the things that basically I just explained, and just that it was a little bit that it is not our usual. It is a not safe for work episode, and what I plan on doing is just putting a. I think in the regular podcast feed, it'll probably show up at some point, but it won't be like a playable audio file. It should just show up as just like a regular text file with a link on it. so that other that you can go to that link and be able to download it, or just it'll show up and you can it'll show up in everyone's regular feed, but it'll show up just as basically kind of like the show notes would show up without any sort of an audio file, and but with a link to the HPR episode when it gets uploaded, with a disclaimer, of course, and a full explanation of everything.
Well, if nothing else, episode 102 has established that Honky loves Linux.
Along with many other things. I commend you for actually finishing listening to it. The whole like second half, I had put it on my phone. I was listening to it while I was driving like home from work. And after a while, I'm like, I gotta just shut this off. And I would shut the only thing I would do is I'd just keep the thing playing, but I'd shut the radio off so I couldn't hear it. I'd let it go for a little while. I'd turn the thing back on and go, oh man, I'm still talking. Oh man.
Well, if I can listen to 101, you can listen to 102.
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, we don't isolate anyone here. Lord knows I've rambled enough myself.
Okay. Listener feedback, if we're ready for that. First off, before I delve into all the stuff, you know, all the listener feedback this this episode is going to be stuff I dumped on G Plus in the last couple weeks. I did not see anything on the mailing list for listener feedback. Am I correct?
Well, that's because the mailing list doesn't work.
Well, that would explain it. Okay. I posted a few things in the last few weeks to the Linux Slugcast group on G+. The first one was a copy of an email I sent off to sales.pine64.org. I'm sure regular listeners will know I'm one of the people that bought the Pine book, which is inexpensive, about $100 laptop that uses an ARM processor, you know, essentially based on a Pine 64. And after having about, not quite a year, I don't think, I've Door has one, Flying Rich has one, I don't know if Joel. No, but in any case, we've all sort of came to consensus of what we do and don't like about it. And I sort of presented this in an outreach to email at Pine64, say, yeah, these are things we like. These are things that we wish you could have done differently. Can we expect a version 2 model with, you know, you now that you have the more powerful Rock 64? It's not Rock, it's I gotta look at this website in a minute. It's Rock something, but I mean, it's a the Pine 64 is no longer their most powerful mini computer or single board computer. They've got one now. It's, well, probably the main difference, a little faster clock speed, and the max amount of memory has been updated from 2 gig to 4 gig. So, you know, I thought, well, I'd address this and see, is there going to be a Pinebook Mark II that have these newer features incorporated? And I actually got email back from T.L. Lim, who is the head engineer and Pine 64 founder. I mean, if there was anybody who's going to be Mr. Pine 64, he is the guy. So, first in the show notes, I had put in both my letter and his response, but in his response, he quotes everything in my letter, so a lot of it would be duplication, so I just deleted my original letter. But he got back to me, said, hi, 5150. I emailed from the 5150 address. Starts out, I am TLM, Pine64 founder. And then repeats my first question. Question one, modularity. So we were really expecting a laptop of a Pine64 inside, rather like a Pine Top. And by the way, the Pinebook kicks all kinds of butt in relationship to a Pine Top. But okay, if you use real, and I'm sort of paraphrasing myself here. If you used real Pine64, no way you could have made it as thin and light because, you know, the IO pin sticking up and all that. You know, so instead of sticking a Pine64 in there and then, say, plugging a jumper cable into the Ethernet, and, you know, to bring the Ethernet port to the outside, and the same thing with the USBs and sound, etc. This is, they did have a custom board with nothing really sticking up on it. I said, I do know that the Pinebook is electronically compatible with the Pine64 because I'm actually running an image, you know, made for Pine64, not for a Pinebook. I said, you know, I asked him how hard would it be to change out the two boards inside? Could there be an upgrade kit to a next generation platform, and then maybe for dock sort of that would, you know, so you wouldn't be throwing out the guts of the original Pinebook, turn it into a dock to make an extra Pine64 of IO pins and stuff. And I was surprised. I was actually floored by his answer. He says, actually, we have explored using Pine A64 SOM called the SoPine on the Pinebook. However, due to physical concern, end up need to design a dedicated board. We plan on release an upgraded main board in the future that user can change themselves. And this is direct quote from when he said, I mean, obviously English is not his first language, but I would certainly understand what he's talking about. So yeah, even though the two boards inside the case that are kind of screwed down in there, it would be possible to remove them and replace them with a more powerful core. And they have plans to that end. He didn't say when that might be available or anything, but I think that was one of the things that a lot of the Pinebook owners were wanting. And so hopefully they'll be glad to hear that. Okay, second issue is trackpad. And I said, I know you're trying to keep the price point under $100. I appreciate that, but every Pinebook owner that I know and have talked to would rather have spent a little bit more to get a better trackpad. The main thing is the two-finger scroll is just, you know, scrolling with the trackpad is horrible. I went so far as to say, if they still make those doohickeys that has the wireless thing, has the ball mouse that goes on a ring, I'm thinking of getting one of those, but I took it out to PenguinCon and Linux Fest Northwest, and I should have thought, well, Linux Fest Northwest, I said, yeah, I really should have brought a mouse. And then I was at PenguinCon. Yes, I should have remembered in the week in between to throw a mouse in there. So right now I've got a full-size wireless mouse on it. It would not be as, you know, unfortunately, if you're carrying around, I mean, that's fine if it's sitting there on your desk or whatever in the hotel room to use the mouse. But if you're actually taking it to sessions or whatever, you know, then dealing with a mouse and a place to set it and all that kind of stuff. You know, because not every place, some places at these conferences, you've got a table in front of you because it's like a lecture hall or something. And a lot of places, no, you don't. You're just there in a chair. It'd be nice to have a little less unwieldy solution. A trackpad's not on something that's normal, like a normal plug. Sure, probably if I knew enough about electronics, then I could desolder the, or cut the wires to the trackpad and put in a better one. But I'm thinking that is probably beyond my ken, unless somebody were to do it and put out a YouTube video and tell me what part to buy.
Have you looked into any of the USB trackpads?
You mean just bringing in the USB port sitting next to it?
Yeah, I've seen them. People who had carpal tunnel issues, so they couldn't use a mouse, were using them as an aid back along. I just a suggestion. I haven't used the USB trackpad even on my ProBook here. I use a mouse instead of the trackpad that's built into it. And I'm sure it's a better trackpad than they can afford.
We'll have to look into that. Okay. My third issue was speakers. I told them I'm a podcaster, and in my reviews, I've been harshest on this point, going so far as to say, and I've said it on this show, the speakers are not fit for purpose. And I went on to say, understand the original Pine 64 was meant to be connected to HDMI or external powered speakers, and thus no provision for internal amp. I'm assuming probably they looked at an amp and, they couldn't power it with the external power supply, since it, thing is based on a Pine 64. And then I said, what we're all doing is we install pulse audio volume control, and then every other place where the speaker slider sliding it clear to the right. And yeah, you could understand it in a very, very quiet room, but you've got to strain your ears still to really hear it. And not fun, not very much fun. So it doesn't really bother me that much, because I don't really consume audio media with it. If I'm doing the Road Warrior thing, and I'm, if I want to consume media, then I plug a Chromecast into the TV. It's in the room. But so I do know a guy, and I was talking about Flying Rich, that, he consumes media in his house on a MacBook, and he was looking for something lighter, and just so he could go in a room where he wouldn't be bothering anybody and watch stuff. He's talked about that before, and he was hoping to do that with the Pinebook, and with the speakers not being any good, that really hasn't worked out too well for him. And I mentioned, well, maybe we should both just break down and get Bluetooth speakers. But TL Lim, he corrected me. Said there are amps in the Pinebook, and if you'd looked at this page on our schematics, you would have known that. So I guess the problem is just the speakers themselves aren't powerful enough. So that's, and as I remember, when I had it apart, the speakers were just sort of in there under the grills with hot glue. So that's something I could source myself, either tear apart a set of desktop speakers, or get some cheap speakers from an electronic source on the internet. That would be more powerful, and if there is an amp behind them, then they ought to work.
Goodwill for computer parts.
Exactly. And I do that regularly.
And
love
you may,
that place.
And you may also consider... they could even think about a speaker delete.
Yeah, I don't know if that. Probably start giving people 1,000 options, and then nobody gets satisfied with what they want. So, I mean, that, you know, be real easy to update those speakers, I think. And hopefully sometime this summer I'll do that and report back whether I'm successful or not.
Well, I'm just saying, or maybe not even a speaker delete, but think about putting a jack that cuts off the original speakers and allows you to outboard whatever you want.
Well, there is an external jack. But those type of speakers, they usually require, you know, an external power source. So, you know, like if I'm going around the conference, you know, I don't want to be carrying around a set of desktop speakers and finding a wall plug to put them in. Though if I'm at a conference, I'm probably not going to be, you know, I'm probably not going to turn the set, you know, be listening to anything that's going to interrupt the conference anyway. So for a lot of the stuff, I don't need speakers. It'd be nice to have them, but I don't need them. Okay, battery life. And I do know I have really not sat down and said, okay, let me use this as my main computer for a day and see how long the battery lasts. I do understand from Dor and Rich that it lasts a very, very long time, probably over a day or at least a day. But the problem I've had with it, and this has been confirmed by Rich, see, if you unplug it and you leave it sit for a day, I come back, you know, try to turn on, there's no juice. Now, TLN said it should maintain 90% power for a month. Well, that's not been my experience. I mean, when LinuxFest Northwest and PenguinCon were a month apart, before going to PenguinCon, I tried to turn on and see if there's any juice in the battery, and there wasn't. So I had to leave it plugged in for a few hours. I guess some people are having a different experience with that than others. And where drawback for me is I would like to leave it, you know, in my go bag for computer consulting, you know, and just pick up the thing and go, rather than, you know, right now I've got it plugged on a shelf, plugged into a wall, where I could use it for network monitoring if I want to. But, you know, the main reason I have it plugged in is because if I want to take, you know, if I want to go, you know, I want to have it juiced up. So, even that couple minutes to take it, unplug it, put the whole thing in the case, that's still not as convenient as just grabbing my tool bag and going. All right, the last one, I told him I thought this was kind of funny or a little entertaining. At least I'd always managed to get it through TSA. But, you know, you'd always tell all your stuff comes out except for that laptop. That's because they've got it in the back and they're looking at it, because when it goes through the X-ray, it looks hollow on the inside to them, because it's just two little cards on top of each other that are about the footprint of a Pine 64, which is about half again as big, at least, as a Raspberry Pi. There's a battery, and then there's a trackpad and speakers, and that's, you know, really, that's about all that's in the thing. And in fact, as I said, I came coming back from Seattle. I actually had a TSA employee come up to me and say, "Sir, why is your laptop hollow?" And I think I talked about that. I said, well, it's based on single board computing technology and it has all it needs. Fortunately, I'd been using it and was charged up and was able to turn on. So, yes, this is a working laptop, and let me go on my merry way. But I guess that's one that he hadn't come across. He says, I've gone travel for Pinebook in the States, in Asia, in Europe, and never been questioned by airport security. So, okay, you know, probably all bad luck on my end. Nobody else is having that problem. Also, he said he invited me to try out the new KDE Plasma OS build. So I might do that, at least try it out on an SD card when I get a chance. So I thought, you know, that was, you know, altogether rather productive and an informative exchange.
Sounds good. I'm glad that he was able to get back to you in such detail on every question.
Right, and especially when it's, you know, not some guy in just tech support, actually the guy who built the thing. That's doing pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. And I also sent out another G Plus in the Lugcast group. I copied it from the homepage of Hacker Public Radio. Please consider supporting the https://archive.org/donate/ now hosting our media files. And of course, I put this in because they also host our media files, Linux Lugcast media files. Right now, a generous supporter will match your contributions 3-1. So your $5 donation results in $20 for the Internet Archive. If you are not already aware, then I go and say archive.org also hosts the media content for Linux Lugcast, and which makes it possible for us to keep providing content. And I encourage listeners to either show, and I know there's many shows that throw their content up on archive.org for free. So as a way back to pay back this show, we don't ever ask you for any contributions to this show. So, but you know, I think it, if you can afford to throw some shekels in the direction of archive.org, this 3-for-1 deal is perfect time to do it. So, you know, if you're listening to me, yeah, I think it's only about a week-long deal, so you know, if you can get on it this weekend, that would be most appreciated. Okay, also came across this interesting project. I may be a little harder on them than I should have been in the G+. So a lot of this has sort of been reworded by me. It's Free Office. So it's an alternative to OpenOffice. Open source for Linux, Windows, and Mac, just like OpenOffice. The interesting, that's probably the best word I could use for it, feature of FreeOffice is they're trying to emulate the ribbon from Microsoft Office. And typical, I mean, OpenOffice does the same, or LibreOffice, I should say. OpenOffice 2 is still another, you know, still out there, I guess. You know, you open up a new document, at least in the word processor, and I don't know, some people maybe like to see the whole page, but, you know, this ridiculous amount of white space on either side of the document, where you're only using a third of the screen. I don't like that, but you know, that's a couple clicks on the view menu. And I can really see this if you were in Office where you had to drag the Microsoft people kicking and screaming in a different direction. You might tell them, no, that's Office 18. Don't worry about it, you know. And I ask if Zorin's still out there, you know, so we could maybe fake the whole thing and make them think they're still on Windows. Also, so I've got a screenshot there of the Word and or the word processor, which is TextMaker. There's also a presentations client, I guess I didn't put the title in, and plan maker, which I assumed was some sort of scheduling program. I opened it up this evening and it's a spreadsheet. And also with the ribbon on there. And to give them credit, when you're installing it, they give you the option, do you want the ribbon or do you want file, edit, view configuration instead? And there's a way to switch it back and forth, I think, even once you get it installed. So, and, you know, it's always good. We don't want LibreOffice just to be the only game in town. We want somebody out there to challenge them. So, yeah, everyone knows I am not a fan of the ribbon, but if they get away with it, that's another speculation I made. I thought that was the whole reason behind the ribbon, is so they could go sue anyone who did anything ribbon-like. So, you know, I guess that's on the Free Offices legal team to intercept that when and if it comes. To install. Now, there are deb and RPM files on the site. Since I'm running Solus, that wasn't any help. But you extract the image files, just create a folder so things don't get jumbled up. And there's like a generic installer to run. And it'll take several minutes for it to install, because I was looking, okay, where are the icons? Where can I get to it? And about, oh, probably 6 minutes later, the icons were there in my menu. Okay, this is one I posted yesterday, I guess, or the day before. And I'd gone to Indiegogo to review or to redeem my 1/3 off on the Atari VCS. And if you haven't heard of it, it's a lot, form factor's a lot like the old Atari 2600. You know, I think almost flat, that full size. And it's a lot like the Linux-powered Nintendo nostalgia boxes that came out last year to, you know, very low production, that come out with, you know, 100 old Nintendo games. So this is going to come out with 100 Atari games. I don't know if they're all 26. I didn't look at the list good enough. I don't know if they'll all be 2,600 games or if there'll be 5,200 and Jaguar games in there. I hope so. Should be more than enough powerful to actually to run those. It will work as a regular Linux desktop PC, where those Nintendo boxes didn't. Even though they, you know, it was proved pretty quick that they run Linux at the core, and I think there were some hacks to get a desktop running on them. But this is made so you can use a Linux PC. Says it'll work with Linux games. Quote. Now I don't know if that includes Steam games. I assume probably just install a Steam client on it and have Steam games. It's, you know, for the price, it's going to be like a very low-end Steam box, which I don't even know if they're still selling those. But there, you know, you had the cheap ones and the more expensive Steam boxes. For me, since I pre-registered, it's 200. Everybody else, it would be 300. So you can't go back and get that 200 price if you didn't catch this a few months ago. But sure, I sure wouldn't expect it to run any top-end games, even if they are ported to Linux. And while I was there, I found the link and took a look at it. It's supposed to be the world's smallest mini PC. Well, let's say it's the smallest one running in Intel hardware.
And by smallest, they don't mean the bare, certainly bigger than the bare board, single board computers that are out there, even the ones that do run Intel. But it is the Mi Mini PC. It's Mi Mini PC. Link in the show notes. It looks identical to the Heigl. I assume they mean you pronounce that Heigl. Heigl, which has been out there on AliExpress for about $149 for at least a year, but the gold one only runs an i5 and 4 gig of RAM, and the Mi has 1 gig or 8 gig of RAM and a i7. And I guess I need to look at that, see if the early bird price is still available. They weren't selling that fast the other day, but $159. So it's only for the early bird, it's only $10 more than the high goal if you can get that early bird price. In fact, when I first hit the page, it didn't show the early bird. It, the cheapest it showed was $189. I was thinking about it then. For $159, I figured all in. Now, bad. It comes with Windows 10 and Android dual booting, and even on the Mi, the i7 one, the Android's only 5X. In fact, that's one of the options on the Indiegogo page that you can upgrade to Android 7.1, which is still not the latest Android. So it must not do it automatically. Now there was a Gear Best article that said they didn't think it would be very possible, or at least not very easy, to install Linux on the Heigl. But I did make an inquiry, and the project founder, Leo Chung, who is in Hong Kong, responded personally to say yes, it's got a boot manager, and definitely you can install Linux and still multi-boot with Windows and Android. So towards that end, there are two upgrade storage options. I went with the most storage. It comes with 128 gig SSD, and I bu for $50 more, I bumped that up to 512. So that should give me enough room to have, all plenty of room for all three operating systems. And unlike the Pinebook, this is what this is. It's got a 5-inch screen built in. It looks a lot like a smaller tablet, but it's significantly thicker, maybe an inch and a half. So not gonna fit in normal pocket. It'll probably fit in pocket of cargo pants. Comes with a Bluetooth keyboard. Of course, it's a touch screen, so you wouldn't really have to have a mouse. Comes with a carrying case that I think would make it way too big to fit in cargo pants. And the carrying case doubles as a stand, so if you can set it on a table and have it at an angle. So I don't know. It's sort of a niche thing. Definitely walking around a conference or something, being able to take the computer and stick it in my pocket is a plus. And just for the price, I mean, we've looked at a lot of stuff, looked at on here, many computers. One's more in a laptop form factor, but only, powered by o only a Raspberry Pi. Oh, the little one. The little the mini Raspberry Pi.
The chip.
Zero.
Yeah, zero.
Yeah, the zero. You know, some on, you know, on a more powerful microcomputer, but, you know, most everything we've seen like this, you've got to print out your own case and, you know, source all these different things. And by the time you're done, for an ARM-based computer, you're probably still, you know, pushing $150 easily. So I figured out for the price. Now, if you go to that link I posted, I guess I posted these, but I didn't post to Google Plus. But if you follow me on Google Plus, and maybe we'll get that in the show notes before the end. But there were some responses. A gentleman responded today that, you know, here's this thing that is, you know, also on Indiegogo, but it's better. And he's right. There's a couple things that were better, but it was $800 as opposed to 150 or 200. So I think I'm good with this choice that I made on the Mi. At the very least, that, you know, one of us in the podcasting groups will be able to give a review of it and say if it's good or not. Because there's a lot of these things that are been reported on. It's dual boot Windows 10 and Android. And people have tried to put Linux on it and said, there's 7 or 8 different partitions and it won't boot to memory stick. So, you know, we can't get Windows on it. Like I said, I've got a statement from the founder saying, yes, you can put Linux on it. We'll see if the truth, you know, how true that is, when it shows up, if it shows up. You know, some people thought, oh, he's just taking a picture of that thing on Ally and made vaporware. So,
something people should think about with machines that are running Windows 10. I believe Windows 10 has a Hyper-V capability.
Oh, exactly. You could run a full Linux under it. I don't know if that's really what I would want to do, is run Linux under Windows 10. I can see that for developers. People stuck on in Windows architecture, and then for trials, various things. I mean, I understand why people do it. I don't think I would trust. I wouldn't think I was really running Linux, running it in a hypervisor under Windows. But you're right. If no other way, it's certainly possible.
Well, I was thinking of those that, if it won't run on the bare iron, use Windows as a hypervisor, and you can just, your only application is your Linux machine.
And that's definitely a way to do it. I wouldn't consider that as secure as running Linux on bare metal, but you got to do what you got to do. Okay, now that's all this that I've been talking about is stuff that I threw out either on public NG Plus that was, I thought, relevant to this show, or stuff that I put, you know, in the group for this show. So we haven't actually got into show topics yet. So, which we're about to do now.
Real quick, I'd just like to point out that Free Office also has Did you lose me?
I think. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I just saw that. Yeah, the Free Office also has an Android version.
Oh yeah, yeah. I should have brought that up. That it, because most of the stuff on Android is things like Office 360 or Google Office stuff that's all hosted in the cloud.
Right. And I was actually looking to try it out, but then I just didn't get around to it. And then I thought, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of use case for it, but I definitely thought it was a good idea. I mean, there's got to be people, especially with like tablets with like a Bluetooth keyboard, if it's a halfway decent office program for Android, it's worth a look.
Yeah, I don't do correspondence using word processor or do documents using word processor anymore very often, but that's one thing I was going to mention. Since I was kind of critical of it, next time I do create a document that it would work for, I'll try it out. And, before I say, it's got a ribbon, it's got to be bad. And like I said, you don't have to use the ribbon if you don't want to use the ribbon. It would be good if you're trying to entice people over from a Windows environment.
Or those who want to live with, who have to live with a Windows in the next cubicle.
Right.
And that computer you bought looks very much like a mini PC with a monitor attached to it and a nice little form case.
Yeah, exactly. When and if it comes, I'm looking forward to playing with it.
Well, may I put in my 32 bits? Actually, what you have there is a real honest-to-goodness proper CPU'd netbook.
Yeah, for definitely smaller form factor. I can't stick a netbook in my pocket.
That would hurt.
Yeah, well, you have but I'm saying you have a touchscreen netbook, which, a netbook was designed to be the, you know, like the Chromebooks, a full computer that you could carry without getting, a bad back.
Right, and I'm sure for most people this is going to be a narrow niche case. If this thing was $1,000, it would be out of the question.
Yeah, well, also, you guys who are doing this are, I mean, I don't know what kind of power you have there, but in a Linux environment, especially stripped down, that is to say, with the other OSs removed, you have something that could do most presentation work, could even run VMs pretty good.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can definitely see if you were doing the presentation, you know, walking in the room, plugging this thing in the projector and going.
Yeah, no matter, you're talking about having a client machine. I think this would make a pretty good client machine that you can kind of carry around with you and then use things like a Next2Go or what was the other very popular one?
VNC?
Well, yeah, VNC and
TeamViewer.
TeamViewer. That's it.
I believe, I don't know about Android, but you could have TeamViewer on all, certainly on Linux and with your Windows partition.
Yeah, I believe TeamViewer works both with TeamViewer works both as a client and a server, I believe, in Android.
Oh yeah, definitely. If I get this, I'll find a use for it. I mean, on the Android side, you can do your media consumption, Hulu. You know, I mean, you could use. Of course, if I'm traveling, I'd be carrying the smartphone anyway. But still, that would be another way to access your Hulu. Throw it up on a Chromecast, whatever. Same, and you know, for doing consulting, if you got some sort of situation where you just had to have Windows to solve the problem, then yeah, that's, I guess this is a way to go.
Podcasting?
Oh yeah, you definitely use this for podcasting from a hotel room. Of course, you could. I'm sure you could use, you know, an ARM computer, or, you know, in a pinch, a smartphone just as well. I mean, it's what Honky did the last show. But, yeah, definitely you could carry a set of headphones and do podcasting with this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's got Android on it, so you can always install Plumble. That should work fine.
Well, I mean, since we've had technical difficulties, it's a great little backup machine.
Right.
Exactly. I can see myself switching from jeans to cargo pants and just carrying this thing around all the time. Just if I need a computer, certainly any time I would go to a customer or go to town or whatever. You know, I mean, let's face it, the cool factor is a part of it too. I mean, since there were some presentations that involved doing some coding on Sunday at PenguinCon, I was carrying around the Pinebook, and you know, bunch of people recognize. You know, nobody had one, nobody had seen one before, but a bunch of people knew what it was, and I was never so popular. So imagine you come into something like that and you know, pull this thing out of your pocket of your cargo pants and set it up.
Actually, I have a couple of, there's sort of lunch bags, that insulated bags or whatever, that have a shoulder strap on them that would fit very nicely.
Yeah, and someone said at least the one that was based on the Hi-Goal, they'd seen people get those and crack the screens pretty easily. So yeah, that'd probably be about the perfect thing to carry one around in.
Well, the insulated container, I mean, you have it in the carry case inside the insulated container, so it's well padded.
Exactly. That would certainly be a perfect use case.
Yeah, I think it's just fantastic that the thing's Intel-based, too, so you can put basically any OS on it. It's a 64-bit Intel. I didn't see whether it was or not.
Well, it's not. It's a. Let me bring it up. Yeah, I'm sure it is, because it's a I class and an i7, so that'd definitely be 64.
Oh, it's an I just saw Intel Atom X7. I didn't know it was an i7, or is that the same thing?
Well,
I'm seeing the Atom.
Yeah.
Oh, it is an Atom. Okay.
Yeah, I got excited when you said it was iSeries at $159.
Well, even the iProcessors and the Celerons are a lot more powerful than the old netbook processors that we're thinking about.
Well, I didn't think they were making the Atoms anymore.
There actually is an 8-core server class Atom chip. It's what powers a lot of your NASs.
You're right, Atom X7.
I didn't see the little gaming add-on. That's pretty cool. They have a little game.
Spare battery, spare battery, spare battery.
Yeah, you dropped off again, honky.
I tell you, I have this problem a lot. There's the little gamepad that the thing slides right into.
Okay, I knew it had an external control game controller. I thought, well, I just put any USB controller on. I might have to go back and get that.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, well, I'm still looking at my first SSD. And the heck of it is that it will probably go into one of my slower machines.
Okay, stretch goal 2 unlocked. Now every backer will receive a Pocket PC installed CPU M3-Y730 and 16 gig, not 8 gig of RAM.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't have 16 gig on it on any box here.
Yeah, it's going to make my two desktops and my good laptop jealous.
I don't think I have 8 gigs of RAM on any machine here.
Okay, now that's an M3, which is, you know, not an Atom.
I might have to look at that then.
Let me see. Do they still have the any left at the early bird price? They
257
do.
Left.
Hell, somebody must have bought one. I'm seeing 256. maybe one of our listeners. Maybe one of us. I don't know. Yeah, 2 days ago when I got mine, it was in the 500s. So they're not going real fast, but I wouldn't want to wait till the end of next week to make a decision on it. And for $519, you can get 4 of them.
One for every room of the house.
Actually, that starts getting the, let's get a co-op together.
Well, yeah, I was thinking for a business or something, if they're going, you know, if they were providing, well, something to carry around for sales. I mean, if you wanted to build an application for your business, it would be sort of like the UPS drivers have. I mean, they have, you know, they have their proprietary tablet to show, yes, I've been, I'm at this point in my route and I've dropped it off. And, you know, I'm, you know, every time they drop off a package, so it constantly is, you know, talking back to the home office. I mean, I could see a lot of businesses that would have a use case for a mobile point of sale sort of thing that could really use something like this. Okay, processor not as powerful as what I'd thought, but getting there. If they're, you know, if they're going good, because the M3 is essentially the mobile version of an i3, so that's still fairly decent power in that kind of form factor.
Plus, with that much RAM, you should be able to do what you need to do.
Well, I mean, you know, like with the with the Pinebook, which, yeah, I really like. I don't know if I'd want to, you know, edit a podcast in Audacity with it. You know, I'm sure it could do it eventually, you know, but I'm betting you could sit down on this thing and get it done in half the time.
Yeah, probably. Like I said, I think some of these machines might be stronger than most machines I got around here.
Well, then as long as you can hook it to an external monitor.
Yep, it's got HDMI out, so, you know, if like I said, you're a road warrior, you take this in your hotel room and plug it into the TV and have your big monitor. Now, the one was $800, you know, one of the perks on it was, yeah, if you plug in an external monitor, then the touchscreen automatically turns into a touchpad.
Does it have USB-C?
I know it has USB-3. I'm thinking it does have a C port as well.
Yes.
This makes my Pentium 4 look a little sick.
Let's see, it weighs half a pound, 16 millimeters thick, 90 millimeter on the short side. Yep, one USB-C, TF card reader. Let's see, a dedicated TF card reader read an SD.
Not sure.
Well, USB 3 card readers are a dime a dozen.
Oh yeah, you could just throw a card reader in your go bag and have it with it.
And use the TF card as additional onboard storage.
Right. Now, Amazon, if I put in TF card reader, it says micro SD TF card reader, so maybe it is the same thing.
Yeah. God, that's got more storage than a lot of my first machines had, desktops and all.
Well, I think my first box had an 80 meg hard drive. I have files bigger than that now. And I thought it was huge at the time.
Actually, when I was over at MIT, they had scrounged together a machine that went from 1134 to a small VAX. The hard drive they had was a 14-inch 80-gig pack drive. Small HASIC washing machine size.
Yeah, I remember those. I was going to say earlier you were talking about looking for smaller flash drives. I think what you'll have to do, Netminer, is look at some of these novelty ones.
Well, one of the things that I'm going for when I get the money is to use there's a CF to SD card adapter. So I can probably use, when I get things squared away, I can use that so that the flash inside is masquerading as a CF card.
Yeah, at least you don't have to buy those expensive CF cards, even though the CF adapters... I make pretty stiff still, but I guess the only other function we haven't mentioned is gig Ethernet, which everything has now. But hardly any of my client boxes here gig Ethernet.
Well, that's the one thing that I've done again in all of my internal systems is, if possible, up them to gig.
And again, this would be great if I was carrying it outside my carry-on luggage, just in a pocket. I'd drop a tray table down and go to work or whatever. Whereas with the laptop, you've got to decide when when they're telling you, oh, your bag is not going to fit, even though you're allowed one carry-on bag, which is a small commuter jet, and we're lying to half the people when we tell them that. So you've got to check your bag through. Then you've got to decide, do I want to carry this laptop around with me through the airports or whatever, or just say, nope, I'll see you on the other side. You know, with this thing, you wouldn't have to make that decision.
Well, I've seen people using tablets with keyboards on the commuter rail and stuff, and this thing would beat those all hollow. And it's probably got the crypto instructions for security. I'd really like to put that on my 40-inch TV, though.
Oh, I didn't have the right key down. The one thing I haven't got yet is the game controller. I may have to go back and get that. And if somebody can't look at the page right now, it's essentially you're slipping this thing in between the two sides of the controller like a Nintendo Switch. You know, so you have your buttons on either side of the screen. So I may have to get that because I think I got every other upgrade. Now, I don't know if this Indiegogo as a whole that's flaky, you know, because usually you go through and where something like this, there's additional, well, they call them perks, but I mean, you know, there's additional stuff to buy. If you want to get add-ons or upgrades or whatever, you know, you get the main thing and then you click the upgrade or whatever. I have had to go through and you do it as a separate order for each individual item every time I've gone through there. And has caused some problems because the fraud alert on my credit card has said, hey, there's a whole bunch of things ordered off this one website. Let's shut the card down.
Is it going to be separate shipping for each item?
Oh, surely, since it's one Indiegogo account, they'll figure it out. Because some of the stuff, like the hard drive upgrade and upgrading the Android, it wouldn't make any sense unless they realized, yeah, this is all one order. I did get the extra battery because it was only like $10.
How much battery life are they expecting?
They say 6 hours, which is probably as much as I would ever use in a day.
Notice that the extra battery is one of the items you can order multiple times.
One thing that's always bothered me about extra batteries for laptops and things like that is no external charger.
Right, the device would have to be your charger, so you'd probably, you know, charge the extra battery before you left home or whatever. And yeah, if you're gone several days, it might not be that much of a help, but like I said, I got it because it was fairly cheap anyway. Figured, well, it's probably going to be one of these deals that if I need it a couple years from now, and it probably won't be any place I can get it. So get it now. And the memory upgrade stuff says stretch goal 2. I don't see where stretch... May have to scroll down further to get stretch goal 1.
Well, the interesting thing is, one of these days, some of these battery people are going to realize what they really need is a USB plug.
Okay, here's stretch goal 1. Every backer will receive a free biometric security fingerprint USB drive.
So, not the M3?
I'm sorry?
So the stretch goal 1 wasn't the M3 processor?
No, that's stretch goal 2.
What's stretch goal 3?
Doesn't say yet. Well, maybe if I scroll down far enough, it'll say what if there's any more. Nope, that's the bottom of the page.
They gotta have something for next month's update.
And I'll admit I'm probably too much a sucker for shiny, but I'm glad you guys have just haven't been on here and said, "Oh man, you were stupid to buy that thing." So I'm looking forward to playing with it and reporting on it.
I think the big thing is, for the price, you can't beat it.
Well, that's kind of what I thought, though. I did see, I mean, I do have a as powerful laptop with a 17-inch screen that I paid $100 for, or less than $100. AMD process. Well, it's a dual core AMD, but I mean, I'm older, but probably be just as fast. I did see on Newegg they were showing a Dell laptop for $99. I didn't click on it to see what you get for $99, but man, I don't see how Dell could stay in business. I mean, if they're paying for the Windows license, it'd be more than that.
Might be last year's leftovers.
Very well could be.
Well, I've seen a laptop, please put air quotes around it, available at CVS. It was a Windows CE machine.
This past Christmas, I've seen a lot of these laptops that are kind of like the newer version of netbooks, where they have like no real hard drive to them, that were coming in like around $100.
Right, the ones with the 32 or 64 gigabyte SSDs.
Right.
And I mean, this that's another advantage of this. It has actual storage. I mean, not Buku actual storage, but you know, 128 gig is still better than the 64 you get with a netbook. And, you know, for $50 upgrading to 512, I figured that was worth it.
Yeah, on that form factor, 128 is probably more than enough, especially if you have any type of computer at home that has more storage that you can access remotely.
Exactly. I would not want this to be my only machine, but you know, from away from home, stick it in the pocket, have a real computer, you know, shoot.
I have an application to recommend for those Nitro Share. Seems to be a multi-platform sharing solution that would be great for this little box. Windows, I think there's an Android port, and there's certainly a Linux port.
Oh, and I guess if anybody is listening to the feed and saying, hey, you know, I don't know where I can get this yet because I have to wait for the show notes to be posted. If you go to Indiegogo.com and put in the world's most powerful pocket-sized PC, I bet you'll find it.
Yeah, I just went to Google and did a search for my mini PC. My mini PC. It was the first result.
Okay, great.
Well, if I get rich next year, maybe I'll put it as a server on my P1. I have a 5 1/4 inch bay that would probably slide right into.
Hey, Netminer, just start offering as a service recycle people's computers and offer to pick them up. Eventually, you'll be able to put together a halfway decent machine.
What? P4? 1250 AMD? P1? A couple of first generation APUs? And a i5 2400 laptop. Oh, I have an AMD machine with dual core laptop too.
Well, just looking around the room here, the tower I'm working on is a Core 2 Duo. Not quite as fast as the I series, but not so much. I think that you're going to tell much difference between it and an i3. I've got an i3 laptop that I was given the key. I still haven't replaced the keyboard. I need to do that. But I used it for months as my main machine. It's just the reason it came to me is you just really got to pound on the keyboard to make it work. I've got, you know, cousin gave me a machine that he'd right after the fire, and you know, he'd paid money for it, and he didn't think much of it. So of course, it's an i3 installed, or maybe it's a Core 2 Duo. No, I think it's an i3 as well. You know, I've got a room here full of just cheap machines, and very few of them. Well, other than the mini computers, none of them that were bought brand new.
I think the only computer I got that I bought brand new was my tower, my main tower. And I got that, I parted that 7 years ago.
Well, I bought a couple of machines new because I was hoping to have one for my mother to drive this big TV, but it didn't work when I was trying it under Windows, so she's passed away, so. Say sarah, sarah, but I've got a couple of machines that I really have to harness everything together, and I'll have a nice set. The AMD 64-1250 gives a whole new meaning to the word slow.
Well, do we want to slug on or save my content links for a different day?
Up to you, Fitty.
Well, I know Honky's got to get up early on Saturday morning. I hate to, I hate to stick him with 2 hours sleep again.
That's fine. You think you can slug through it in like half an hour?
Yeah, probably so. Tell you what, let's do this. We'll go another half hour and quit wherever I am.
Okay.
All right, before you start, can I just throw out that I found something on G Plus that was it was a link for the Magpie, and it was to put Android Auto on the Raspberry Pi. I just looked at it real quick, and it looks somebody's really been working on this thing. They've put together a little program called, I think it was called Crankshaft, where you just basically download the image, put it on. I think they have it set so right now so you can put it on a Raspberry Pi, the newer Raspberry Pis. And they're supposed to be working on, I haven't like looked too much further into it because I don't have a Raspberry Pi 3. And one of the things I was hoping for and that they said that they're working on was to get Bluetooth working. So I was debating on trying to either get a Raspberry Pi 3 or seeing if I can get everything off of GitHub and try to put it on my Pine 64, put in like Git Arbian and compile everything on the Pine 64, and then putting my little touchscreen monitor on that and getting it to run. But it seems to be pretty, like if you have a Raspberry Pi 3, you basically just download this, the image from GitHub and basically just put it right on there and hook your phone up to it. Hopefully, I didn't check to see whether it was updated. So it had Bluetooth support. But if not, then you just plug your phone directly into it and you have an Android Auto screen set up and you just, set that in your car. So it looked really cool. It looked really simple. And I know we had talked a couple weeks back about it was a Raspberry Pi entertainment system for the car. You had talked about you wanted something that was almost like the Android Auto, and this is actually just Android Auto. So I saw that, thought it'd be cool. Figured I'd throw it in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks. I was looking at that earlier. I've got the page open. Okay, that was originally filed under FWEEB, but that was your link?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I want. Glad you brought that up because that is definitely something I'm going to be looking into. I saw a YouTube video about a week ago about the cheapest Android car stereo on Amazon. And I actually looked, could not find that unit on Amazon. There's several similar, but it's just like this big rectangular box with like a tablet screen on the front. And the trouble with that was, it's like twice the height of a normal car stereo. And I guess maybe the later ones are like that, but it wouldn't fit in anything I had.
Double din.
Yeah, double din. So it's like a double height, you know, trying to put a double height server in a rack or something.
That's fairly common these days.
Well, that seemed cool, but I would probably have to get one of those where the, you know, the screen flips out and all that, you know, because it'd be cool to have it for now. It did include, I think, navigation, and you could install Android apps. It had Wi-Fi, so you could, you know, at least when you're in a garage, you could connect to the internet or pull audio files over. You know, had external plugs, so you could plug a music player into it or an audio player into it. That's my thing. Even my fairly newer stuff, none of it has an auxiliary in jack. Except this. That one last pickup I bought, they had a custom radio in it, but it's sketchy and doesn't work. But it does have an auxiliary in, so sometimes I can get it to work. But that's what I was thinking of, is put that if there's going to be a vehicle, probably I'm going to be doing much cruising around in, that would be it, and it wouldn't be a bad, you know. I was thinking some sort of Android radio in it wouldn't be a bad idea, so I kind of looked at that, but. You know, I could definitely look at this project too and see if you just bypass the whole thing and use a Pi, especially since I'd probably be wanting to pull my content off of the media player. Okay, I guess my 30 minutes is counting down. Most of these are just links. One I've come up with in the last week. I'm one of the people, you know, I learned ifconfig before I knew IP existed, and so I'm resistant moving over to using the IP command and its various associated commands, networking commands. This article explains why we should do that. In other words, not using ifconfig, netstat, etc. And essentially the main thing is that the old network tools pull everything from a folder, and they pull it out of files, and so they are not as accurate as the new ones that actually go looking down into the network stack. So there are, you know, there are types of network interfaces that are not represented if you use a tool like ifconfig versus a tool like IP. So.
A pretty, you know, novice Linux networker, the fact that I could get an IP-A without having to go sudo or whatever was really helpful.
I mean, one of the things it talks about, that ifconfig does not report EM X devices like EM0, EM1, because I don't know offhand what EM0 and EM1 are, I put this in parallel to the people who learn System 5 and then are now complaining about System D. They were gurus in System 5, now they got to learn something new. Okay, like I said, anybody wants to learn more about that, article will be in the show notes since we're moving kind of fast. this is an old one, and it's mainly a knock on Windows. It was someone found an easy way to extract SSH keys. So another security hole in Windows that we don't have. So again, that's it. That's a few weeks old now, and if somebody hasn't heard about that and wants to learn more, there link in the show notes. This is an interesting one. Is retaliation against robocallers. And used to be, oh, there's nothing wrong with your credit card, but you're missing an opportunity. And now it's about my car insurance. It's like, yeah, my newest car is 2 decades old. Car warranty. So I don't think my car's under warranty anymore.
Actually, I can do better than that. My mother was given a lot of those things. First, she never drove, never owned a car. And since last summer, she's passed away. So they've been beating a dead horse.
Okay, and again, it's not necessarily Linux related. I thought people just find this interesting. I got it from a YouTube video. Apparently, there's also applications for Android you can get to do pretty much the same thing. But this is a website. It's called isaiddontcall.me. No punctuation, no spaces, or anything like that. And essentially, if you get like a robocall number, you can come to this site and plug it in, and they will, have an automated server that will repeatedly call that number to annoy them, and essentially do a DDoS on the number. So I'm surprised this doesn't come down legally as harassment or something, but apparently they're able to get away with it for now. And I had something installed on my phone that would, supposedly block these calls, and then I didn't enable it because it's essentially, it's the same thing as NSA. Whoever, if you install a program like that on your phone, then they know who's calling you. Every phone number comes in. But there are, if you want them, there are applications who have a database supposedly of these robobot call numbers, and just block them so you don't ever get one again.
A lot of the legit calls that I get from India come up listed as a likely scam. So I don't know how well one of those would work for me.
Oh yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it's gotten to the point where out-of-state numbers I don't recognize. I hesitate to answer, though a lot of them are now in-state. Probably because people were doing the same thing I was. So, but a lot of times I see a long-distance number I don't recognize. And if I happen to miss the call, I'm not too worried about it. I figure if it is somebody actually trying to call me, they'll call back. Okay, this again, got some links left over from, we didn't have time during the last show. There are more of these kernel level vulnerabilities they're having to patch. And it's the same problem as last time with the look-ahead operations. And seen a news report on it. Says, okay, yeah, we can patch it and say goodbye to another 7 or 8% of your processor function. But it's very similar. Now, this time they're claiming that Intel at least is claiming, hey, it's not our fault. Every one of you operating system developers misread our documentation. But it affects Linux, Windows, Mac, FreeBSD, and somebody exploiting this could crash Intel or AMD computers. Could gain access to sensitive memory information. Since patches are now available, so if you're keeping your systems patched, you're probably okay. But it's a second go around of the same look ahead procedure, and since time's of the essence tonight, and this is pretty much old hat. If somebody wants to come delve into the details of the article, there will be a link in the show notes. I think I mentioned this briefly. We talked about a few weeks ago how, Chrome OS will get Linux app support without going into developer mode. Now, you won't be able to get like a Linux desktop, but you will be able to fire up a terminal emulator and say run GIMP. Of course, you'd have to install GIMP first, but it'll run right there in the regular Chrome window. Again, Pixel is getting this before everything else, but eventually it should be propagated to every Chromebook.
By the way, I've been Googling for that EM interface. Depending on your OS, BSDs call the EM interface for Intel drivers. And in a more general terms, it's a management interface for your network.
Okay, this one I pulled out of the Outcast Planet chat a couple weeks ago. The site is u-git.org, and what it is, it's a lot like YouTube DL, but it encompasses a lot of different sites. Now, I know YouTube-DL isn't restricted necessarily just to YouTube. But the link I put in here is to supported sites. YouTube, of course, Twitter, VK, I don't know what that is, Vine, Vimeo, VidTube, VideoMega, VO, Tumblr, TED for TED Talks, SoundCloud, Showroom, Pinterest. Music played on MTV 81, Mixcloud, Metacafe, Magisto, Khan Academy, Internet Archive, Instagram, InfoQ, Imgur, Heavy Music Archive, Google, Freesound, Flickr, and it just sort of goes on and on.
A lot of those use YouTube DL as a back end.
Right. I imagine it's probably very similar, but I was thinking it was just when I first saw this, I was thinking it was just a web tool, but no, it's downloadable software for Linux. So if you've got a site that you want to download and it's not included in YouTube DL, well, you might want to come check this out.
Gentlemen, I have another blast from the ancient past that I'm going to be experimenting with under Linux. Gopher!
Well, you have to check out Claw2's site. I think he still has Gopher up.
Well, there's a plugin for Firefox, both the old style and the new quantum style, that gives you access to Gopher space.
Yeah, I used Gopher back in the day. Isn't it like being currently used as an alternate internet?
It basically is, and that's part of why I'm getting it, to see what is out there in the not quite dark net. Also, for my internal stuff, I might look into doing a Gopher server of some kind, because I believe that there are some available. In doing some look about networking, somebody said that they had a post on a Gopher site, and when I clicked on it in Firefox, it said, "What the heck?" Basically, Firefox didn't know how to talk to it, so it's a side effect of digging into the once in future network. The deal that happened was that the University of, I think, Minnesota, who has the rights to the code, started charging for it. And the CERN web server was not charged for. And the open standards people went for the thing that they didn't have to pay for.
Now, aren't there browser plugins for Gopher sites?
That's what I was pointing out, that there's one at least for Firefox, probably Chrome and others. I ran across, I haven't yet used it. I just had this one link that my Firefox said, "What the heck?" As I said, you know, Gopher space, we don't have a program we don't have a way of managing this content. I heard about it back in the old days when the internet was largely Usenet news and FTP.
The 90s?
Yeah, back in my dial-up days.
Okay, alternative to YouTube DL is YouTube FS for YouTube File System. And what this does, it actually uses Fuse to mount YouTube storage, as part of your file system. So in other words, you would mount it as a folder under your home directory, and then you could browse Google's files just as if they were there on your hard drive. Now, this was brought up at the same time on Oddcast Planet as the You Get, and I played it was already too late in the evening when I started playing with it. Kind of got it working, have not got back to it. Now, I don't know why you'd want to do this rather than just finding a way to download the file that you wanted. But if for some reason...
Sounds like they'd get around to advertising.
Right. Well, first thing you'd want to do is update your distro. And then, assuming that you already have Python 3 installed, I kept trying to use pip3 to install YTFS. And it kept telling me that you don't have a new enough version of Python 3. After playing around and look at the error messages, I found that I needed to do sudo pip install fusepy, sudo pip install OLE file, and then I could get pip3 install YTFS going. And then under my home folder, I made a directory named YouTube. And ran YTFS against that folder. Commands YTFS space YouTube. Then did a change directory down into YouTube directory, and then a make dir, and then a YouTube channel name. I use a real world example here in the show notes. Justin Scard, who I follow on YouTube, he does mainly sort of road trip videos, some abandoned places videos. A lot of theme park central videos. I find them entertaining. I have that folder mounted, but I can only see his most recent videos, and they're all the same file size, and I can't copy them or play them. So someplace in there, either the program's gone wrong or I've done something wrong. Okay. Couple more links that I just added today. Apparently sometime this next month, if I understand this article correctly, which I may not, the EU Parliament is essentially going to be voting on ending fair use, which means that you, essentially what they say is only the content creator could make a Xerox of an article. So in other words, you couldn't get part of an article out of the New York Times and copy a paragraph and use that in teaching materials. Now I don't think they exactly have fair use in the EU like we do here, but this would just sounds like it would throw it right out. You could not copy any kind of copyright material for any kind of reason, including personal use. The second part, Stevie Ray, article, talked about how Tesla is at least starting to release their software code for their cars. Which they always said they were going to do. They haven't done it. They haven't released it all yet, but they're starting to put it out there. So if you want to build an electric car, I guess that would be of interest. Okay. By the time we're here together again, I'll have come back from Southeast Linux Fest. I'm looking forward to people I've talked to online for years and never met in real life, like Chad Wallenberg and Dave Yates and Dan Washko. So hopefully others. So yeah, definitely that's the main reason I'm really going. Usually Southeast Linux Fest is exactly the wrong time of year for me. But my wheat's still green. It's not going to be ready to cut for 3 weeks, and I'm not going to be the one cutting it this year anyway. So I figured I could, for once, I could get away and meet some of the folks that I wouldn't otherwise get a chance to say hello to. So, and now when I booked for self. I was looking at last year's schedule, and last year there was a lot more home user oriented Linux content. Looking through this year, it's like 95% enterprise stuff, it looks like to me. So I guess that means many more time for the hallway track. Not that I'm not interested in that sort of thing. It's just a lot of stuff I probably wouldn't use.
I had a question about the YouTube file system.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I probably went way quick.
No, I was just thinking, Let's say you put that on a server on your network. Would you browse it with a file browser, or would you browse it with a web browser?
I was browsing with a file browser.
Yeah, Fuse lets you browse with a file browser.
Well, I was wondering what you would play it back with, or...
Well, if you just if you clicked on a file and you have VLC installed, it'll just run VLC.
Well, the thing that I could see, if you set it up on a server, is that your the server would deal with the internet connection, and your local machine could deal with rendering. Again, I'm talking for those of us who are working low-end hardware.
Yeah, I can see that. And like I said, one thing, unless I was going along with the instructions, it looks like you'd have to create a folder for every YouTube channel. I mean, it's not like you can just, you know, put all of YouTube out there as a in a subdirectory. You'd have to have a separate subdirectory for every channel. And like I said, I still don't know why it appeared to work, and then, you know, the videos weren't anything I could use. So probably have to go back, start at the beginning, and see why. Sometime when I get bored and say, hey, why didn't that one thing ever work? But maybe somebody out there can play with it and get it to working and tell me what I did.
Well, it's right now I'm looking to organize YouTube over the web browsers, and I have to use basically a thumbnail add-in to replace the old YouTube, you know, when you could have actual YouTube categories for your channel. I could see you having an intermediate directory, which would be YouTube Linux, YouTube Music, YouTube whatever.
Well, this might work out for academics. Let's say you had how-to channels as part of your, you know, part of your curriculum or whatever, and you want people to be able to access them without having to go to a web browser. Maybe maybe YouTube is blocked on your network. In fact, well, I've seen that. By default, these tools to block content from schools usually block YouTube by default. And of course, I was the administrator, and the teacher said, no, there's educational stuff out there too. Now, I have to admit, I would go in the classroom and I would see, the computer lab, and I would see kids intentionally tanking a test so that they could watch sports videos on YouTube. And it's like, there's going to be a day that you wish you used the opportunity that the taxpayers have given you. But I really couldn't stop that without blocking all of YouTube. And like I said, the teacher said, no, we use YouTube to teach. We need it.
Yeah, well, what it allows, especially if you're in a server environment, is for the administrator to filter things channel by channel.
Well, okay, I think we've more than burned up Honky's 30 minutes.
We've done it amazingly efficiently, too, which is something new for the show.
Well, there's a lot of this stuff we probably could have discussed in greater detail had we wanted to, and I'm sorry for any listeners that think we gave short shrift to some of these topics, but like I said, the links will be in the show notes, and if you want to find out more, then that's all you have to do is grab the show notes and educate yourself. Okay, is there any other business, or should I go into the outro script? Seeing no other business, this has been episode 104 of the Linux Lugcast. I have been your host, 5150. With me have been Honky Magoo.
Good night, folks.
And Joe, who was muted when we started, so he didn't get to say hello.
Hello. Goodbye.
And Netminer.
Hello, friends. And all respect to those of what the Canadians call First Nations. I'm just trying to be a sidekick here and leave the hosting to those who are much better qualified.
You find one of those people, you let me know.
Okay, we'll be get together again on the 15th of June of this month. Our intro and outro music is Downright, provided by Claude2 and Brome. Thanks to Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review for our web hosting, WordPress support, and email server, none of which, I guess, is still current, but Tony's a great guy, and he's done a lot for us, so I want to go continue thanking him. And thanks to Delwyn for providing the Mumble server. And creating a bot module to find the next show, just go to the hash Linux Lugcast channel on Freenode and type .ns on the command line. Email, which I guess isn't working, is feedback@linuxlugcast.com. And I'm not going to read out the whole G+ community link. It's just if you go to G+ and up at the top search bar, type in Linux Lugcast. I'm sure you'll find us. Or check out any, since this is in every show note that has ever been published, just go back to any of the old show notes, and that link will be right there in the feed. Mailing list as well. IRC server is Freenode, IRC channels Linux Lugcast, which I've just said previously. I guess we're out.
Evening. Hey, what's up?
Not much. How we doing?
Are you far away from your mic, or is my headset messed up?
I'm not sure. Does this sound any better?
Yeah, that sounds a lot better.
All right, then that was my mic.
Oh, I'm still at work today.
Ooh, fun.
Yep, switching to the later shift for a month or two so one of my other employees can get the training they need. Plus, if I didn't switch to the later shift, they wouldn't have had anybody to cover me when I go on vacation.
Oh, that seems like a decent trade-off. What's the later shift running its own?
12 to 9.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, it ain't terrible. So, I'm here for another hour. Yeah, well, I've just been working on my most expensive hobby. Women? Nope. DOS PC. Yeah, I got family coming in next week, and then the week after that I go on vacation and got more family coming in. Think we're going to go to medieval times.
That sounds like fun. It's like a run fest.
Yeah, it was fun last time, but I hear that they've gotten a new script since then, after like 20 years of keeping the same script.
Now, is that like a Renfest, or is that more like a show?
It is definitely a show.
Okay.
With Renfest feel to it. Or an Amtgard, not an Amtgard, SCA feel to it.
The only thing like that I've done is, now I don't remember what the name of it is, but it's the one that they do at the Excalibur in Vegas.
It's probably similar then. I'm not sure what they do at the Excalibur. It might be a medieval times. I know Vegas is supposed to have one.
It's, you get a seat, you sit down, you get fed, like a giant turkey leg. And
period food, yeah.
Exactly. And then you basically sit there and watch a jousting match.
Yeah, this has jousting matches. It has, well, they had horse tricks. They had dancing. They had a play. Crap like that.
This was just jousting, so yours sounds a little better. Granted, it was a jousting match where I think they tried to do like a little bit of a story or something like that, or they tried to, I don't know, something along the lines of, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a storyline going along with the tournaments. And it was a bit more than just jousting, though. It was also swordplay and...
Right.
They had a falconer that I saw, and rope tricks, and a bunch of other stuff.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking my dad to it. And I'm sure he'll enjoy it.
Now, have you ever been to Renfest before?
Yes. A couple of them. I went to the one in Las Cruces, which is smaller. And then I went to the big one in Colorado. Just, what is it, south of Denver? Right next to the Air Force Base.
No, they have one here in Massachusetts, but I've yet to go to one.
Oh, have you ever done anything like Amtgard or SCA?
No.
It's fun. You get to go hit people with swords.
That does sound like fun.
The major differences are is with SCA, the Society for Creative Anachronisms, they actually use metal weapons and metal armor and go beat the crap out of each other. With AmpsGuard, it's all foam.
I got a friend who just got into the business of, I don't think he does the smithing for things, but he started a business of like selling and promoting the sales of actual armor.
Cool. So I got called a nerd today, and I didn't know whether or not to be insulted.
I don't know. That's a tough call. I guess it depends on who called it called you a nerd.
Somebody else in production support said I was nerdy because I'm into Linux and have been for off and on since I was like 8 years old.
So does this person just not really care about computers? They just keep trying to do a job? I say, I don't understand that. I mean, I think if you're into computers and stuff, you're at the very least going to try everything that's out there, whether, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, Linux, BSD, Mac, Windows, you just want to try it. Netminer playing with DOS.
Well, I know she has a Linux server set up at home, so I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, yeah, one time she said that she was having a problem with her computer, and about halfway through it, I gave her the answer that, how did you know the error that popped up? Well, because I've done that before. And all it was is she hadn't created an X11 server and was trying to use her applications remotely.
Yes, you need X11 for anything visual.
Still, X11 server mostly sucks.
Yeah, what is that modified server that's better for remote stuff?
X2Go.
Actually, on my Pentium 1 DOS box, I'm going to be trying to, while it will support DOS networking, it will just about boot MicroCore Linux.
Speaking of X2Go, I was having a problem with setting up X2Go on the most recent versions of the Pi, which annoyed me because the old versions did it just fine. And the only solution I found was VNC. Even on a headless, you can force it to HDMI and set up VNC.
So you're talking, what are you talking about for newer versions of the Raspberry Pi? The newest Raspbian or the Raspberry Pi 3B?
The newest version of Raspbian, even on the older hardware.
So something in the newest version of Raspbian broke X2Go?
Yes. And I don't know what yet.
Well, I suspect somebody's going to be beating on it, because X2Go and the Pi seem to be a natural mix.
Right.
Actually, I've thought about, oh, I got to tell you about a great hack somebody's done with a Pi. They've made a dial-up internet modem.
Cool.
You hook it up to your ancient serial computer, GOS or whatever it is, and you give it a modified AT command that tells the Pi which telnet bulletin board to hook to. So as far as the computer is concerned, it's talking to a very weird modem, and thus you can put almost anything with a serial port on the internet, sort of.
Cool.
What's expensive about my system is I've put in a CF card to IDE interface that sits on the front panel, and I'm probably going to go with a Intel network card. When you're working at this low, it's a 32 meg machine at the moment. When you're working at this low level, having the most powerful network system can only help.
Evening, everybody. I apologize for my tardiness.
No worries.
Since on time often is 9:30, you're actually 12 minutes early.
True that. Am I way too hot? I was on another podcast last week and they kept asking me to turn the gain up.
A little warm, but not bad.
Well, I'm just 80 degrees here. By the way, lest people think that I am dealing with Microsoft, even for MS-DOS, I'm dealing with FreeDOS. There's a Russian port that is compiled for 386 plus machines.
So Netminer, you said you were playing with MicroCore Linux?
I haven't yet because I haven't got Ethernet card.
Gotcha.
The reason I would go MicroCore is that MicroCore will give me an ability to use a known networking stack to transfer stuff over, and it will probably, if I load mTools with it, it will talk to my to the DOS side of things.
Now, does MicroCore have the desktop environment, or is it purely shell?
It's a shell that's supposed to run in 28 megabytes.
Right.
They're supposed to be Siltaz or something like that, but it's French. And it starts up in French language, and I don't know how to switch it over.
I thought Siltaz was a different project.
It is a different project, but it's, again, these are in the world of DSL. Which not only is a wire protocol, but it is damn small Linux.
Right. Which I find DSL ran heavier than TinyCore Linux did.
Well, I've run it on a 32 meg machine, but my other 32 meg is a laptop and has no onboard network.
Have you ever looked at any of the Puppy Linux?
Yes. Anybody got any 64 meg, 60 nanosecond SIMs? EDO. Eventually, and this may be a long time, I would like to replace the 4.8 meg sticks that I've got in it with 64s or 32s. The board's pretty good. It can run up to a 256 meg RAM.
So what is it you're doing with the older hardware?
Well, largely seeing what works. FreeDOS has 32-bit FAT capabilities, so I can get up to 8 megabytes of hard drive.
What are you doing with it, though? All 8 megs.
Well, that was found out by seeing what a 16 meg flash stick would do. Can't buy anything smaller than 16 meg in flash at Micro Center locally. What I'm basically doing by upgrading to flash at all and hoping to get USB capability and stuff is to try to future-proof the machine. IDE hard drives are getting very very rare, and having something to jump to is very nice. Also, I'm a great fan of Free Pascal, and with appropriate shims, it will just about run on a machine like this.
What have you been using Free Pascal for?
I do text editor development. I'd like to do some terminal stuff. Maybe some primitive Ethernet work if I can get the gods lined up. I'm planning also on using this machine as a test bed for restricted access.
What does that mean?
I may not, or I would like to configure it so that it only talks to the in-house network.
That seems like a doable goal.
Well, again, it's going to be set up to be a potential basically a client machine for my in-house stuff.
Nice.
Unfortunately, it appears that I killed the floppy side of it, so I'm going to have to go to a flash-based I/O system. It does have a CD-ROM, but there's too much ROM and CD-ROM. Should I decide to, it's got a 16-bit sound card and stuff in it that I can fiddle with if I want to go that route. it's interesting to see this FreeDOS. It's a bit like Debian in that there's a pure 16-bit only basic open source core, and that's what the FreeDOS project is about. And there's not, and this Russian is more, well, even older processors have 32-bit capabilities, or a lot of them do. Let's take advantage of that and still build on top of the core, just like so many distros build on top of the Debian pure open source model and give you some closed source elements to make it more user friendly or with greater function.
Fifty, you don't like to make my job easy with those show notes.
I know. I should probably done what Kevin always wanted me to, is create a create a separate page and have it jump to it. It's I dumped a whole bunch of word salad into G Plus in the last couple weeks, and so I figured the best way to do it would just copy it all over.
Apparently I screwed up with when I posted 103 and I didn't put my apology at the beginning. Though in the spots where there was the missing audio, I did have my children saying, oops, sorry.
Yeah, what I've listened to 101 and 102. I have not got to 103 yet. What did we lose?
It was about 15 minutes. My like I said, my so I changed this machine that I do the recording and stuff on to a Mint machine, and it's XFCE, I think, and it's I'm so used to all of my Enlightenment desktops where I have presentation mode set up so it doesn't doesn't go to sleep at all, and in the middle of the podcast the computer went to sleep. And then when I woke it back up, the sound went away, and there was nothing I could do like to get it back. So that's why I went onto my phone, because it still showed that it was recording. So I'm like, all right, maybe it's still recording, but I can't hear the sound. So I spent a few minutes on the phone, and then while I'm listening to the podcast on the phone, and then when I had it tried to go back to sleep again, and I woke it up real quick before it actually went to sleep, and the sound automatically came back, and then when I looked at the recording afterwards, that like 15 minutes span of time was just dead audio. So, oops.
No, what I meant was, what were we talking about when it went oops?
I think you were PenguinCon.
Okay, well, I won't try to bore everybody by recreating that unless somebody writes in and says, hey, we missed out. No, not even then.
I don't remember where what it was specifically, but I think it was around PenguinCon.
I got a weird message from Google that our show notes were in the trash and I need to make a copy.
Yeah, so I don't know what the heck I did. So normally when I make the show notes, I usually do it on my phone, and it's an easy copy and paste of a document that I have set up as kind of a template, and then I just kind of I fix the show number at the top, and I fix it where it says the next show recording date, and then I put it in the drive, Google Drive, and I just share that link. So I don't know what the heck I did wrong, but I did something wrong because I did it on my laptop this time, and I did something wrong. I shared the wrong thing. Something didn't update fast enough. I don't know, because what it shared was there was like two versions of the exact same document for some reason, and one wasn't edited at all. One was edited, so it was the edited template file. And I don't know what happened. And you know, I'm actually going to look to the future of using Etherpad.
Yeah, well. I'm just observing. I'm not objecting. Getting anything out of a Google product is sometimes a tricky process.
Yeah, normally it's an easy process, but I don't know what the heck I did this time.
Well, that's just it. It's normally... It's those damn outliers. Murphy is just waiting over the fence.
Yep. And we had when we initially started this podcast 4 years ago, we were initially using Etherpad. But we had switched over to the Google Doc. And this past New Year's Eve show, I had set up an Etherpad, and it seemed to work out pretty well. I put CentOS... Oh, thank you. That's probably a good idea. Do a backup recording. I put CentOS on the Banana Pi. I just got to start it up, and I wanted to put it in the DMZ. And play around with it and see if I can get maybe Etherpad running on that, and then open up a port in the DMZ.
Yeah, I just wish I'd remembered to start recording 30 minutes ago.
That's all right. I want to play around again with trying to record off the stream. So one of the, not this past year's New Year's Eve show, but the one before, I had just used like MPlayer or WGET or something like that to record the stream for the entire New Year's Eve show, and it worked perfectly fine. And then I tried it again this year, and it died after like 7 hours or something like that. I had three different. I had one. What I have? I had one using WGET. I had one using one computer using MPlayer, and then another computer using Curl. I think it was Curl. And all three of them seem to have died at the same time. I'm not sure if there's just something in my network, my internet access here that just spiked, or that my ISP didn't like what I was doing for whatever reason. But all of them, like right around the exact same time, all three of them died. Sorry, where I was going with that. I would like to be able to revisit that, trying to do record off the stream, because I think that would probably make it for a good backup, is record off our stream.
Well, I haven't dealt with Etherpad myself, but what does it provide to the end users? Is it a web interface?
Yeah, it's a lot like a Google Doc, where it is a web-based application that allows for multiple people to edit a document at the exact same time. You can also export it into different formats, like you can export it into an HTML file.
Sounds great. When I get this, when I get the Ethernet card and stuff, I will, it will be interesting to see what you can do with the very low end hardware. And one of the things that I'm glad to hear that there is a package that gives me wget and curl if I want to use them.
Yeah, wget has got to be one of my favorite tools.
Now, the interesting part is that I'm... one of the things I like about the plan of going with an Intel NIC is that I can probably get it to run on almost any VirtualBox or some of the others using the emulated drivers.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Again, it's just pushing the envelope of truly micro hardware. A Pi 3 is like a Cray compared to this machine.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But there's a certain joy of fiddling with a machine that is not your daily driver.
Yeah, because you can break something and it doesn't really, you know, it's not going to hurt your daily production.
Yeah, when the floppy system went out, that you know, if I'd been relying on that for, you know, keeping my data like I used to with DOS and XP, and I was a big fan of zip drives back in the day. And when those things go down, it's can be a pain if it's your production. Also, I would like eventually to try doing some server, well, some storage-based stuff under DOS.
type of storage based stuff? Use it up as like a backup server?
Well, see what I can do. Again, yeah, backup server, but basically see what I can do with roll your own. I mean, I've got 2 gigs of storage on it, and I can have up to like 10. So, you know, that's not insignificant storage for minor stuff. And with 3 Pascal, I can scale it. Though their DOS port is less than thoroughly supported anymore. But if you can do it under DOS, you can do it anywhere, basically.
Pretty much.
Also, I've run across a project which called VFS, which uses a packet driver and some kind of Linux server to provide storage services to the DOS machine. I might try going the other way. Or doing something, you know, client server where the roles can be swapped. Yes, gentlemen. For a period of time, I used RT11 on TU58s. The TU58 was a quarter-inch digital drive run with a microcontroller to provide block replaceable tape storage over a 38K serial link. Think a floppy drive using a tape cartridge and a serial interface.
If somebody come up to you then and said one day we would easily have terabytes of storage on these systems,
Compared to USB, 38K serial is just about paper tape speed. It was so bad that our RT-11 wizard would put a bad block at the turnaround point of the tape unit, so it wouldn't ever write a file that required the machine to rewind and go back to the second set of tracks. If digital can do it on an 8085, I think I can do it in a high-level language on a P1.
Yeah, it's too bad we can't take all our current programmers and maybe give them a semester of emulating whatever, but what people, and this is before me, I mean, when I got into computing, we had compilers that would pretty much do these things for you, but, make people write code that actually does something in 16K.
Really? I've started out as far as my machine type programming on a Silicon LSI PDP-8. PDP-8 had basic memory of 4K words up to 32K words in the standard configuration. Later on, they went crazy and gave you up to 128K words, but that was a very late stage system. Someone on YouTube has also used a Raspberry Pi to create an interface to, it looks like a hard drive, but it talks to a Linux server. It's for a homebrew IBM PC 8088 box.
That'd be equivalent to something like a 5100.
Yeah, it's like a Turbo 5100. He has two CPU cards for his system. One is a full-size card, and one is a later high-integration card. The system is based on a backplane and card system, not a motherboard. kind of interesting retro computing. Although myself, I'd probably have gone for a 286 since its backplane can support it.
Well, if you get a link to that video on YouTube, if you want to put it in the chat somewhere, one of us can stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll have to dig up. I probably should start doing some retro computing links, because there's a whole bunch of the world out there that would certainly ride along with Linux people.
Oh yeah, I think retro computing is a big interest. I see on G+, you know, some people do different things. There's one cool one this week. It was like the I think it was a Samsung. I've got it up here somewhere, but of course not Linux or anything. But it was actually an Avon computer that they sent out with the ladies in a case, and it had like a light gun, like the light gun from Duck Hunt on steroids, so they could get a flash of the person's complexion. And so they would point this light gun at the person's face, and it would flash, and it would the Avon computer would then compute, what kind of products were best suited for the person.
That was cool. By the way, there's also a YouTube video about somebody using a 5100 class machine. Floppies only. As essentially a semi-diskless workstation. There are a couple of videos, one of which includes basically sort of like IP-A. Where you get all your network stats, your address, whatever, stuff like that. And this is running on a purely floppy-based PC.
Okay, I was about to ask before you explain IPA, but IP-A, so the IP command. And actually, I've got a link related to that when we get into show notes. So,
should we just kick this thing off?
Yeah, I'm ready if everybody else is.
Yeah, I think we're fashionably late enough.
Want to flip a coin, see who hosts?
Well, I think you've done it since me, unless Joe wants to. I think it's back to me again.
Joe is definitely, well, Joe is muted at the moment, so. That'd be definitely.
Yeah, he can't hear me ask anyway. All right, I'm actually sober to start this time. So, I volunteer.
All right.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org. Or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.